Okay, so what we're going to do tonight is, again, as we tried to do last week, a most impossible task, and that is do some justice to the title of chinuch, you know, chinuch in the home, hashkafic issues, whatever the title was, in 45 minutes or less. It's almost a joke, but what we're going to do, as we have done in the past, is try to touch on a few important yisodos, important principles, and I've personally been inspired enough at this point, based on the research that I've been doing and the feedback that I've been receiving by trying to follow up on with lectures on more specific topics within the realm of chinuch b'neder. But I'd like to begin tonight just by reacquainting ourselves with some basic and familiar concepts, hopefully. And I can only speak for myself, but I think all would agree that these concepts, even if we know them in our hearts and our minds, they require constant review and constant consideration and reapplication. And we always have to take a look at our life and reevaluate whether or not we have forgotten some of the most basic and important fundamentals within the realm of chinuch. I'd like to begin the presentation this evening by sharing with you a basic model, which is the famous model of Rav Shlomo Volva in his Sefer Zri Ovinyan v'Chinuch. It happens to be a very well-known book. For those who have seen it, you'll know why. It's very short, which of course makes it popular among some, and very, very insightful and very important for constant study and review. And the basic thesis, if you will, we haven't started looking at the sources yet, but if you're interested, sorry, there's just some sheets over there, so feel free to take it if you'd like. The basic model that he presents is based on two terms that we're familiar with, that we have seen every day when we're daven, but perhaps have failed to appreciate the connection and the contrast between these two words. And that's what he calls smicha and binyan. And of course, we find these two words very closely connected in Shmon Esrei, where we have first the bracha Bani Yerushalayim, which of course in that bracha we speak about building Jerusalem. And then the following bracha we speak about the prayer on behalf of the coming of Mashiach and the continuation of the process of the Geula. So there we call the process of Geula smicha, which is unlike binyan, which is building. So smicha is to plant and then to watch something develop and grow on its own. And Rav Volva begins the sefer by pointing out that these two concepts of smicha and binyan are not only relevant to the topic of geula, but they really are relevant in the most general sense within all spiritual models. Spiritual growth has to be predicated upon both of these principles, which operate, as we're going to define more specifically later on, simultaneously. It's not one to the exclusion of the other. But we have to focus simultaneously, on the one hand, on that which is called binyan, building, with specific concrete blocks at specific times, but also pay attention to the process of tzmicha, which is the natural growth that takes place in the world. Now, if we want to take a step back for a moment and not speak yet in such abstract, esoteric terms, so let's just consider the world that we live in. The world that we live in, basically all growth in the world can really be boiled down to any one of these two processes. On the one hand, you have a world in which we have many buildings, tall buildings, small buildings, large complexes, skyscrapers. So this all came about through the process of binyan. You build a foundation, and then you have blocks on top of other blocks, and steel beams, and pillars, and however engineers put these beautiful buildings together, it's the process of binyan. At the same time, we see in the world that we live in the natural process of growth, which comes about through the Seder Olam. You plant a seed, expose it to sunlight, you water it, and over time it grows. And the entire world that we see, everything in the world that grows and that builds and evolves over time, comes about through one of these two processes very often. There's a very real and deep connection between the two. And of course, you see where we're going with this. Rav Volva suggests, really, he does more than that. He really makes a very, very strong case. It's almost impossible to argue with that this model is most important within the realm of chinuch. That when it comes to chinuch, and we consider our role as parents and as machanchim vis-a-vis our children, so we need to see ourselves as playing both of these roles. at different parts, times in their development, but really more or less simultaneously. On the one hand, we are bonim, as we're going to define in a moment more specifically. We are trying to introduce concrete building blocks within their lives so they can go from one level to the next, and continue to grow over the course of their life. But at the same time, we are also recognizing the need to be zareya, to plant, to try to sow certain seeds that we cannot control after that point, but we certainly hope and pray that given proper time and nurturing in people, that that's something that will develop naturally on its own. So to be a little more, let's get a little more concrete over here. Vogel suggests that if you take a look, the first two sources on the page that I gave to you, you have two sources that we're probably very familiar with, but he suggests that these two ideals are really representing these two different approaches in Chino. The first comes from the Gemara in Sukkah Daf Mem Beis, where the Brice over there is talking about when it's appropriate to introduce different mitzvos at different stages in the life of a child. And I cut a lot of it out, but the one that is relevant for our discussion at the moment, the Brice says, the katan hayodei ledaber, that once a child reaches the age where he knows how to speak, so at that point, aviv lomdo Torah, the kriya shema, at that point it's the responsibility of the father to teach him Torah and to train him how to recite kriya shema. So I ask the Gemara, Torah, ask the Brisa, Torah Mai, what does it mean, Torah? It's a very odd question. We know what Torah means. So, Amar Rav Hamnuna, Torah Tiva Lanu, Marasha Kihilas Yaakov. That what it means that a father should teach his son Torah means teach him that pasuk. That's quite surprising, because we would have thought what it means is once a child is old enough to read, or excuse me, actually to talk, so what should a father do? Sit down and begin from the beginning. Gracious Balakim is Shemaim V'aretz, and the whole story, right? This is the Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov went down to Egypt, and go through the Seder Kabanos, and go through everything, as much as he can digest, right? Says the Braisa, no. What we're doing is, as soon as the father sees that his son is able to speak, he is what? He introduces him to the Pasuk of Torah Tzivolani Moshe Marasha Kilos Yaakov. Says Rav Volvo, this is an example, again, a simple one, but then again, very profound as well. This is an example of Zeriah. He says, this is planting. This is the role of a parent to plant the seed. I see that now my child has reached a stage in his development where he's able to speak, so it's now my responsibility to capitalize on that moment, not to allow this very sacred window of opportunity to pass, and I'm going to plant the seed. I'm not going to necessarily see the fruits for many, many weeks, months, perhaps years, maybe decades from now, to really see the fruits of this, but I'm going to plant now a seed, and it's going to be a very sacred one. And I'm going to share with my child, what? Torah Tzivolanu Moshe, which, by the way, consists of a lot more than that one verse. Included in this, of course, is parents telling stories to their children, singing to their children. These are all examples of Zeriah. These are ways that we can sow certain seeds early on in the development, so that they begin naturally to develop within inside of themselves an interest, a love, and a real true and inherent connection to Torah. There's another source, which perhaps we're even more familiar with, which comes from a Mishnah in Avos, which says that Hu Haya Omer Ben Chamei Shanim LeMikra Ben Esel LeMishnah Ben Shloshes Esel LeMitzvos Ben Chamei Shosrei LeTalmud. Says the Mishnah that when a child reaches the age of 5 years old, he should begin to learn Tanakh. At the age of 10, he should begin to learn Mishnah, and at the end of 15, he should begin to learn Gemara. For those of you scratching your heads and saying, wait a second, that's not what we do, you're right. So are we doing it incorrectly? So on the record, I'll say maybe not. Maybe times have changed, and we're different, and we know better. But off the record, yeah, probably we're doing it incorrectly. We're doing, a fairly good job, given all the challenges that we face as parents of this Mechanchim. But now's not the time, I'm not going to talk about it now, but I remember hearing once a very strong case made by not only a mechanic, but a cognitive psychologist who was reflecting on how the precision the Chazal had in terms of identifying these stages in the child's development and how important it is to capitalize on certain moments as the brains develop, and that it may be really a, I don't want to say brachal of atal, I think that's maybe an inappropriate term that's sometimes used, but it may be wasting precious opportunities to go ahead and to try to impose and to force upon children when they're not ready to really think in abstract terms the conceptual concepts which are found in the Gemara, as opposed to giving them and taking advantage of the ability that they have at that mind for their minds to absorb, etc. But leaving that aside, Rav Volpe points out that this is an example of binyan. What does it mean? It means a child reaches the age of 5, hopefully is healthy, he's able to learn and to observe information. So what do we do? It's at this point that we begin to build. And the way we build a 5-year-old is by introducing him or her to Tanakh. When they get older, so then we begin to add additional blocks, etc. It's very important, Pontav Revolva, that if we want our children to develop as healthy individuals, and when I say healthy, I don't only mean spiritually, I also mean physically, and emotionally, and psychologically, and in every which way. If you want them to be healthy children, and then which hopefully grow into healthy and happy adults, so then we need to see to it at all times that we are being both Zoreya and Bona, that we are planting and we are building. And this continued process never ends. The type of seeds that I'm sowing and the type of blocks that I'm using to build, obviously going to change over time. Now, I took a little clip. That's a very beautiful piece that he has in a sefer here, and I'm not going to read it all to you, but I took one highlight, if you will, from the sefer, and we'll just read it together. You'll get a flavor for the sefer, and if you're interested, I don't have any copies to sell to you, but I think it'll be an easy sell. I actually think it's available in English as well, which is nice, but it's a bit of a shame. Because a book like this is really kedai to read slowly. And I think for most of us, if we read a book like this in English, we'll just go through it very, very quickly. So if you take it slow, it's okay in English. But it's a healthy book to read in Hebrew, even if the Hebrew is a little challenging. Okay, so what does he write? He says, Yeled hu yitzurkai. A child, of course, is a living being. Hu gadel, kamoshu gadel begufo, kachu gadel gam benafsho, beruch miyuso. That a child grows not only physically but spiritually, and I'll just translate as I read along. The development, the growth of a child requires cultivation, requires nurturing, just like a tree or anything else, any other produce that grows. And special emphasis must be placed on this process of growth, of sowing seeds. If you want something ultimately to grow in years in the future, so you have to be very careful to plant the right seeds at the right time. And then after all, hopefully, there'll be a natural process of growth. On the other hand, mitzvah sheni, yesh binyan, there's also a process of building. You have to build a person. You cannot rely exclusively on the process of smicha. So we've all seen, you see where he's headed with this, we've all seen parents, of course, not us, because we're all perfect, but we've all seen parents that are zorim, pretty much exclusively, as far as we can tell. It's not right to judge other people, but let's talk in theory. Imagine a parent that's a Zoreya. What is it? They're always telling the kids, here's a nice idea, you may want to try this, you may want to try this, but very little structure. And the parent is not really imposing any requirements, is not imposing any sort of important constructive building blocks within the life of the child. It's all, you may want to try this, planting here and there. That is resting very heavily on the process of Zoreya, which is, at the end of the day, a natural process which may or not work the way we want it to. On the other hand, you may have parents that are bonin. You're going to do this now, exactly as I tell you, and if you don't, then this is going to be the consequence. But we're not allowing the child to develop and to grow as an individual. He said, if I go ahead and I build a child, and I enable him, I transfer him certain attributes, but I do not try to connect or relate to his unique process of growth, so then the process of growth of this child is going to slowly diminish and wither away. And the child is going to become a robot. You see that word? Raised above, based above test. Robot. Right? It was a famous song, actually. Still is a famous song. Flowers Are Red. Remember that song by Harry Chapin? Kavalik song. Raise your hand if you never heard the song. All right, I'll have to bring it in next time. It's an amazing, amazing song. Harry Chapin he was a gadol from the Umos HaOlam. And he wrote some very nice songs. He's the one who wrote and sang, what's his famous song? Cats in the Cradle. Cats in the Cradle is his famous song. So he has a song called Flowers Are Red. I'll tell you very quickly, because it's so to the point. It's a beautiful song. It's a very sad song about a child who comes to school in kindergarten, and the teacher says, well, now we're going to draw flowers. So the child goes ahead. Everybody's drawing red and green flowers, as the teacher says to do. And this child takes the pink and the yellow and the purple and the green. I mean, and the teacher says, what are you doing? And he says, well, that's what flowers look like. There's so many colors in the flowers, like the rainbow. And the teacher says, no, there aren't. That's not how we do things here. And she keeps telling him, this is how a flower has to look. And eventually, she threatens him. He gets put in the corner. He gets punished because he refuses to play by the rules. And he gets very sad, and he ends up doing things our way. And the song goes on that they move to another community, and he goes to another school. And there, the teacher is all happy and joyous. And she says, okay, guys, we're going to draw now. And this is what flowers look like. And what is he doing? Now, if he's sitting in the corner making green and red flowers and saying that's what they look like. But that's really what Vav was saying over here, that if we try to impose upon our children our model, they may have worked for us. They may be correct. They may rest very well with us. But if they're not consistent with the particular nature of this child and how this child will develop naturally, so the child's going to become a robot. Yeah, he says, Mustama, the child will do what we ask. And as they get older, they may continue to do as we say because they really have no choice. They may at a certain point exercise some independence, but children understand that they depend upon the parents, they need them. There may be a fear factor, and as they get older and they become more and more free of that burden and connection to their parents, so they may rebel. On the other hand, if we just allow children to do what they want, so if you see he bowls over here on the left column, if you allow a children to just grow and develop without trying to build him, so then Yosef Para Adam, which means you're going to have a wild person, no control, no inhibitions, a very undisciplined child. In Bonim Esayeled, if you just build a child, like you're making like constructing something out of Lego pieces, without trying to relate to the unique Hatzmich of this child, he's going to become a robot. Hatzirov, Shashnei Advarim Yachad, the combination of these two processes, Shakoh Hatzmich or Maisa Binyan, Zehu Chinuch. This is what we mean when we say Chinuch. Chinuch means trying to find the perfect recipe, which of course, Halavai, we should all be zot to find, which is going to consist of, once again, a combination of this process of smicha and binyan. Okay, so I do once again recommend that for those who are interested and intrigued by this concept, I hope that includes everyone here, that at your convenience you get a hold of the Sefer, and you look and you'll see how he develops this more. And it's something, once again, that I can only say, every time I pick it up, I say to myself, why do I not read this book more and more often? It should really be a required reading on a regular day for every parent. Now, moving along to that which is not a different topic, but sort of an offshoot of an important concept that we've already reflected upon, and that is a pasuk that we're very, very familiar with, but I'd like to focus on it tonight in a way that perhaps we haven't seen before. Before I do so, I'd like to relate back to a pasuk that we read a few weeks ago in Parshas Toldos. It's not on the sheet in front of you. The Torah tells us that Yaakov and Esav, of course, were born twins, and each one had their own unique characteristics, their own unique traits. And the Torah tells us, Vayigdulu hana'arim, the children got older. Esav was an ish yodeyatzayit ish sadeh. Esav was someone who knew how to hunt, and he became a man of the field. Yaakov was an ish tam yoshev olim. Translated sometimes as a little more reflective, a little more passive. He used to sit in the tent, and presumably, as Chazal tells us, he would be learning Torah. Now Rashi over there says, what does it mean, Vayigdulu hana'arim? The children got older, and then one day Esav went into the fields, and Yaakov became a yeshiva bacher. Was it that simple? So Rashi, we skip right over. But I'm sorry? Right, so Rashi, it happened around the time of Bar Mitzvah. Well, what happened? This is a very frightening Rashi. Rashi says, Kol zman shel yiktanim lo hayinikarim b'maseihem. Says Rashi, when they were children, it was not evident from their actions as the type of the children they were. The ain adam adaptik bahem mativam, and people did not take a close look at what the particular nature of these children were. Once they became a bar mitzvah, so this one went off to the Beis Medrash, and this one went off to Avodah Zarah. What does this mean? So Rav Shamsun Rafal Hirsch, in a very famous commentary on this topic, and this is found on the opposite, the second side of the sheet that I gave out to you. We're not going to read the entire thing inside now, but this, as you'll be able to tell when you read through it, is known as, perhaps as far as I know, I'm not an expert in the writings of the first, but this I think is one of the most controversial commentaries that he has made. And again, Rehersh Mitzal doesn't require my hashkama. This is something that I think is something that we should all embrace and really appreciate for its very, very important, relevant value. But understand that this was, you know, a very bold manner of expression as far as a commentary on the Torah. And what he basically says over here, it's really a very serious indictment against Yitzchak and Rivka's parents. And he basically says that, you know, Yaakov and Esav were two boys that were born basically, both of them with tremendous potential. And each and every one of them could have become great in their own way. And the problem was, and the reason why Yaakov goes up to, as Rashi says over here, to become a man of the Beis Medrash, and Esav became a man of Avodah Zarah, someone who we know was involved in all sorts of sins, including murder, is because of the fact that they were raised more or less the same way. He suggested they were put in the same school, and they were pretty much taught to do things in a similar fashion. And this was very destructive, particularly to Esav, because he was not able to do the same things Yaakov was, and he was not didn't have those same strengths. And rather than capitalize on his own strengths, and rather than build him up into becoming what he could be, so the two of them were sort of, you know, clumped together, for lack of a way to say it, because of the fact that after all, they were two children, they had the same parents, they're living the same time, the same place, so how different could they really be? And it wasn't until they initiated Bar Mitzvah, when once again, at that point, certainly, historically, that was considered an age of real independence. They didn't necessarily leave the home at that point. Contrary, Yaakov didn't leave the home until the age of 63. But already at the age of 13, so it was Nikar, as Rashi says over here, it was clear that he was already pretty much on the path of being who we knew him to be. And so was Esav. And the damage, so to speak, was already done. Reverse contrast this type of parenting to Yaakov, who he praises that at the end of Yaakov's life, when he had all of his children before him, so he knew the unique nature of each and every one of his children, and he was able to identify, this is your strength and this is your weakness, and he told them point blank, each and every one of you are great, but if you really want to become the best you can be, so you need to be aware of your own unique traits, don't try to be someone you're not, and make the most of what you have. This was how Yaakov parented his own children. Now again, we're not going to discuss right now Parshas Vayeshev, it's very relevant in terms of Yaakov's relationship with Yosef. So the point right now is not to be, you know, see how critical it could be of the Avos in their parenting skills. But for the purpose of our discussion this evening, Rav Hirsch's analysis is very relevant to each and every one of us. He actually quotes the pasuk that is on the page before you of Chanoch Lenar al pi darko. The pasuk initially which says you should educate. If we're going to translate Chanoch as educate, you'll forgive that. It's not necessarily an accurate translation, but we'll use that for the moment. Chanoch Lenar al pi darko. One should educate a child in accordance with his way. Gam ki yaskin lo yasur mimena. So here comes a question I'm going to ask. Gam also, or we'll say, so that when he gets older, lo yasur mimena, he will not veer from it. So let me ask you, when you read that pasuk, so again, I just translated, but what's the connection? What's the chanoch lenar al pi darko, and then gam ki yaskin lo yasur mimena? Explain what's going on over here. Is there a cause and effect? What is the pasuk trying to convey?
It's a never-ending process that
makes him
forever.
Education is there. So gam ki yaskin, you're saying that even when he gets older, you have to still stay on his case.
Yeah.
That was very interesting, because yaskin means what, we usually say yaskin like a zakin is older, right? So even when the parents could perhaps no longer be alive. But you're saying as long as the parents are alive, they have to be mechanech their children. That's the issue.
Or, to make it slightly differently, that as he gets older, the educational process shouldn't stop. He shouldn't leave the educational process. In other words, that's where the Zriya comes in.
Right.
Plant the seed that he knows how to do
himself. Okay, very nice. This is why I love asking questions like this, because I thought there was a typical way of looking at it, and I was going to say the atypical way, but you came up with at least a third, a new way of looking at it. And I've gotten to, it's instructions to parents. Don't, your job's never done. Even when you get old, when a child gets old, that process has to continue. Good. Any other ways that you would interpret the first, second half of this pasuk? Yeah?
Again, from the Nahr standpoint, it's not talking about...
Okay.
It's done,
then
it's going to be natural to him, so he won't deviate
from what he thought. Right. So, good. That's what you were supposed to say. I mean, that's why I'm happy I asked. So Yuri says that it means you should train a child, you should educate a child in accordance with his way, and this way, when he gets older, he'll stick with it. Now, I'm not going to say that's wrong. It's obviously a very fine interpretation of the pasuk, and it's the way that we typically would read it. Yeah?
I think if you educate, not the problem, I think it's the season, and our plan is probably that naturally, he won't be there, but it is his nature. Like,
right. You can be, right.
You can bring a person, in their nature, but once that their nature is set, without you loving, cannot be broken.
Right. So it's right. Just taking what Yudi says, but even bolstering it a little more, that if you really do a good job being mechayich him in accordance with his own unique way, so then you can be sure that when he gets older, he's not going to lose it. Now we're not going to read the whole Perish HaGra inside, but the Gra has a very frightening way of interpreting this pasuk, and it's different than what we just said. The Gra says that what this pasuk means is as follows. Chanoch l'nar al-pidako. You better educate a child in accordance with his way. You know why? Because gam ki yazki lo yasur mimena. Because even when he gets old, he's not going to change who he is. He is who he is, and there's nothing that you can do to change that. So says the grub, make sure that when you train him, when you educate him, you do it in accordance with his way. And it's very frightening. He says, Chazal tell us, and you're familiar with these examples, a child is born, whether it's associated with a certain time of the year, or we can understand it additionally, just by way of part of his biophysiological composition, whether it's a question of genetics, but we know that not all children are the same, right? So I'm not going to go into, I'm talking about nature and nurture, all this. Bottom line is, we're not all blank slate. We come out already pre-programmed to a very, very large extent. We are who we are. We have our own preconditions. We have our own different temperaments. In fact, I'll tell you, I came across today, just listen to this, from the book Balanced Parenting, Rabbi and Dr. Pelkowitz together, a very beautiful book. He brings down over here that research over the last half a century has enhanced our understanding of the interaction between children's basic temperament and various styles of parenting. From infancy on, children have been found to differ in the following 9 dimensions which comprise temperament. Again, from infancy, and this is based on current studies, children have been found to differ in the following 9 dimensions. Activity level, persistence, distractibility, response to novel situations or people, adaptability, mood, intensity of emotional expression, sensitivity, sound, light, touch, or light, and regularity in patterns of eating and sleeping. And then he goes on to give some examples how a little much of, one with a little bit of 3 has 1 type of temperament, 2 with not so much of 4. So you're talking about an unlimited number of different types of temperaments that children can have, and this is not going to change. We can all grow, and we can learn to improve, and of course the Gruff himself is not denying. In fact, the Gruff elsewhere writes that the primary purpose of our being here in this world is to break. The expression he uses to be break our midos. In other words, to work to the extent that we can to express the most amount of personal initiative independence we can, given the constraints that we have been created with. But at the end of the day, we have certain limitations. We are who we are. And the Grush says over here, it would be a very fatal error for a parent to train, to educate a child in accordance with what that parent wanted as opposed to what that child needs, because at the end, gam ki yazkin lo yasurin mena. At the end, says the Grush, he's going to be the way he's going to be at the end. If you really want to see, captures really the essence of this in the last 4 lines on the bottom of the page. V'zesh akasho chanoko na'al pidarko derech mazolo v'tivo kein techanchehu rasos mitzos. In accordance with his mazol, again, the time of the year in which he was born, but I don't know that the Gra is saying that you need to look at that, but in other words, get a sense of who this child is and his nature, that's how he should be trained to do mitzvos. V'oz gam kishiyaz kin lo yosir mimena, aval kasher tavi rehu amazalo, when you try to go ahead and make him someone he's not, ata yishmalacham yirasoloscha. So now he's going to listen to this, he's fearful of the consequences. Aval achakach be'es yisar ulcha me'al tzavaro, at the time that your yoke is now removed from his neck, yasur mizeh, ki I efshar lo esaber mazalo. Because the child, who then perhaps be a teenager or an adult, cannot break away from who he is. And I'm sure that we all know stories and situations that either from ourselves, our own personal upbringing, or things that we've done right, or sometimes could have done better on our own parenting. We could appreciate this. We could relate to this. I remember hearing once a story from Rav Meir Tversky. We told a beautiful story of the Rav It's a beautiful story all around, but just, you know, it was, you know, I appreciate it more so from that perspective. Of course, is a grandson of Rav Soloveitchik's Sapsal. So he tells a story of a time where the Rav got a call. Oh, I'm sorry, there was a certain academic, he didn't tell us his name, but he had a yeshiva, a son who was learning in yeshiva, and the father, who was himself very knowledgeable and very learned, and sent his son to yeshiva, and really had very high expectations of him and what he would become. And one day his son called him, I believe his son was in Israel, and he called his father and he told him that he wants to drop out of yeshiva and become a car mechanic. And his father did not know how to react, he didn't know what to do, and he said that he would call his son back in a little while. And he called the Rav, and the Rav said to him, I have notes in front of him because I heard this story years ago, that if that's what he wants, so then you should allow him. But not only allow him, you should be behind him 100%. And you should find him the best course, and you should pay the tuition. You shouldn't just say, okay, if that's what you want, good luck. But you should really, you know, allow him to follow his dreams. And if this is what he wants, he should be the best car mechanic that he can become. And, you know, the end of the story, which is a happy ending, was that today the son is not a Rosh Hashiva, didn't have that ending, but he's an Erlich of Alabas, and he was working very hard as a car mechanic, and he said one thing, I have here in my notes, this is a story where one time he came late to Shul on Yom Kippur because he was fixing a Hot Sullivan, it became a big Kiddush Hashem, and others. He ended up becoming a very honorable car mechanic, and this is what he wanted to be. The Rav realizes probably on his own that this child was not an Eloi, this was not just like one day he woke up on the wrong side of the bed. He must have understood that there was a history there, but he told the father, this is what your son wants, and that you should embrace that dream of his, and to the contrary, you know, encourage him to move along that path. Now, the problem is that effective chinuch is so challenging to begin with, so then to suggest that parents who are blessed, b'yan har, with more than one child, have to then go ahead and continuously recalibrate and reevaluate and look at with a fresh set of eyes at each and every one of their children is an enormous task. It's one that I dare say seems almost impossible. But we know, of course, it is possible. We recently saw something on a magazine. We clipped it out and put it on my refrigerator. It's been there for about 2 weeks. So I don't know if I remember, but it was a quote from Nachmi Breslov. And it says, my students have been making fun of me all week because they came to my house. I was saying, they've been calling me a Breslov now all week. I'm proud to say that it was a beautiful teaching for Nachmi Breslov. He said that chinuch is 50%. I think it says 50%, I remember now, it was such a nice thing, 50% shalom bias and I think 50% tefillah, something like that. Half of it was tefillah. And you can't forget, of course, when it comes to raising children, so of course there's the siyata d'shmaya factor. Otherwise, you know, a presentation like this would be enormously depressing. Just to go ahead and realize the mammoth task that we have before us to go ahead and properly raise a child and give them the tools necessary to be the best that they could be, it seems almost impossible. So we have to recognize, of course, that in all areas of life, but especially this, we can hopefully trust that God will assist us and bless our efforts. Nevertheless, I heard once, and I don't know if this was said as a joke or as a serious insight, but I did hear that Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal suggested that the reason why a Bechor, according to the laws of the Torah, gets Pishnayim, he would get double share of the inheritance, is because it's basically a way of making up for how much his parents messed up with him. You know, definitely Rav Soloveitchik is going to do something wrong with the first one. You know, hopefully God blesses more children, so then you know, you learn as you get older. And so what was it specifically that he said the parents do more often to Bechor than any other child? They try to fix and to undo their own failings and shortcomings to their children, which is perhaps the greatest pitfall that we all face and the greatest challenge that we all face, not to do that with our children. Our children, we sometimes view them very incorrectly and improperly as being almost like property of ours. They're not. You know, they're a gift, they're a pikadon from Hashem, and we are, you know, giving the ability and the right and the privilege of being able to raise them. but they are not given to us as a means by which we can fix everything that we did wrong. To the extent that we can fix things in our own life, we should. We should take responsibility, but we should never make that mistake because it can have very devastating consequences. We have to know our kids and what they're capable of doing, and we should be very careful not to push them if they're not ready in any particular in a specific regard. I'm going to quote you something which you don't have in front of you from the Sefer HaChassidim. Sefer HaChassidim is not something that was written yesterday, but when you hear this quote, you may be surprised. He says, and I'm just translating as I go along, someone who's a teacher, he teaches children, and he's talking over here, it looks like someone who's a private tutor, really. And he's teaching, two kids are being homeschooled, let's say. One of them is very wise, is very sharp, he has no difficulties learning, and the other one has certain, challenges which makes it difficult. And the Rav sees, the tutor sees that one is learning faster than the other. So he has a responsibility to say something to the father. And even though he may lose, because if they have to be separated, so then that means he's going to get half the pay, it's his responsibility to do so. And then he goes, so that should be such a shocker, then he goes on to say, Chanoch v'nar pi darkam. He quotes that pasuk, and he says, if you see that a child is being matzliach in a certain area, let's say he learns Chumash very well, and he connects with that, but he doesn't do so well in Talmud and Gemara, good, so then allow him. I says, Al tidchok lo asel olam del Talmud. Don't push him to do that if he's not ready for it, if he can't understand it. He may never be able to fully assimilate that type of learning. Just, okay. So let him excel in the area that he excels in. If you have another child that embraces the Torah Shabbat, Talmud, that's something, but he doesn't have that same connection with Chumash, so don't push that on him. In other words, the bottom line is, what a person is able to do, that's what they should be encouraged to connect with. This is true not only in terms of academics, but this is true in every area in life. The problem is, of course, that our educational systems are not, for the most part, set up to really tailor-make an education for each and every child. I'm not sure that we would even know how to go about doing that in a responsible fashion. But the reality is that we can't do that. But to the extent that we can with our own lives or supplement whatever they're getting in school with making sure that they are being able to connect in a meaningful way with that which they really appreciate, so we really have that responsibility as parents. I'll tell you one other thought which all this is certainly related but comes to mind, and that is that every time, and I've had the opportunity on more than one occasion to ask Rabbi Willig questions about chinuch, and Rabbi Willig happens to be in many ways a tremendous role model of mine, but particularly within the realm of chinuch, as I happen to know a number of his children personally, and they're all different and just wonderful, wonderful children. And I remember some of them, particularly when they were younger, and they were very lavadic, to put it nicely. And the word that he always uses, and I've heard him say this to other people, but he said it, and I could hear him, patience, patience, patience. And he says it with such emunah, and, thank God he can really say it now, enjoying Glian Har, the payros of his own labor. But patience, patience, patience. We want sometimes so much from our children when they're not ready for it. They're not ready because they're just, physically not ready. Or again, it's a process. And it takes many, many years sometimes to really see the products and the payros of the seeds that we have planted. But we need to be very careful, of course, always to remember that and to not push and to certainly not express dissatisfaction and lack of approval when it's not appropriate. Obviously, it's important to motivate children. One of the things that I'd like to discuss on future occasions is different methods of motivation and when it is appropriate and when it's not appropriate to offer rewards, what types of rewards should be offered for the purpose of inspiring and encouraging children to observe mitzvahs. So, of course, and I'm not suggesting that, we don't want to be merely Zorim. We have to be Bonim as well. But in terms of expecting to see a result, so we have to remind ourselves it's like a tree. And you can't watch a tree grow. You could stare at it for hours and hours and days, but you're not actually going to see. But over time, you'll see, hopefully, that growth. But certainly, along the lines of patience, 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 it is my personal belief, and this is based not only on my very limited experience as a parent, but more you know, significantly, in my opinion, and not that I have, you know, many, many decades of experience, but having been teaching already, you know, young adolescents for, you know, more than 10 years, I am certain that pressuring children to observe Torah and Mitzvot is something which is not to be pursued at all. And it really, it actually very, very, very difficult question as to when, if ever, a child should be forced to do anything that he or she is not willing to do on their own. Again, within the realm of Ruchnius. So this is something we're going to have to discuss over time, more concrete examples. Next, next week's topic of developing spirituality within children, so I hope to discuss more, a lot more specific concrete examples, specifically, you know, like the Shabbos table, things like that, to try to talk about, you know, in a more positive, proactive way, ways that we can develop our children's spirituality. But at the same time, I think it's important as part of this introductory presentation to just make the obvious but important point that we should not be pressuring our children to do what they are either not ready to do, what they say they're not ready to do. It will very often have, you know, very, again, very harmful consequences, the likes of which we wouldn't want to have to deal with down the line. So every decision we make, every opportunity we have is obviously, you have to view it as an investment, which you may not see the payros, the results of that investment for some time. I would say as well, it's never too late to change and to modify and to reorient the way that we've been doing things. And I'm really speaking to myself. You know, I think just as children are constantly growing, parents as well are constantly growing. And hopefully, if we've if there are things that we can improve in, we still have an opportunity, as Moshe pointed out, Gam ki yaskim la'yosem imena. It's a very nice chat that even when we become elderly and our children, halavai, we should live to see become elderly, so that process of parenting to a certain extent continues. But we should never fear to try new things and to modify our approaches and to try to, you know, improve in this regard. And just to remember and to imagine that, as the verse says, perhaps the story of Yaakov and Esav could have had a very different ending. You know, after all, as we sometimes oversimplify things, Yaakov was a very good boy and Esav was a very bad boy, right? Parent-teacher conferences, so Yaakov, just like Rivka went to school, so they said Yaakov's such a good boy, he comes to school on time every day, and he's just like an Isaac Esav, we don't know what to do with him, he's crazy, he's constantly playing practical jokes, and they were just, he was doomed to failure from the beginning. Rav Hirsch says that's not the way it was. They were not simply destined to go their own ways the way that they did. At one point or another, Esav was a good little boy, and he was looking for love and attention and for nurturing in accordance with his teva, and he didn't receive it. And the way Rav Hirsch presents this generations and generations, to this day, perhaps have been affected by miscalculations and misjudgments in parenting. Now, I'm not suggesting that we rewrite, we can necessarily retroactively rewrite all of Jewish history, and obviously to a certain extent there was a destiny here. Esav and Yaakov represented not just two individuals, but as the Torah says, Ulaom Milom Yamach, Reshne Goy Levitnech, there was obviously a lot of destiny here as well. I'm not denying that. But again, but the stories in the Torah are there for us to learn from. And it first presents over here, whether or not a person is comfortable with applying it to this particular story in the Torah, the point is certainly an important one. Chanoch l'nar al bidarko means that we need to remember the enormous responsibility we have to recognize the unique teva of each and every one of our children, to capitalize that net, and to hopefully plant and to build in a way that's truly in accordance with their nature. Once again, next week, I hope to take what we've done tonight and try to apply them to real life situations, just to give you just a few examples in addition to the Shabbos table, to talk about, as I mentioned, issues of offering prizes and other motivations. We'll discuss issues of discipline and also to what extent parents themselves have, on the one hand, the responsibility to model not just good behavior, but you know, to set a spiritual example, but at the same time, in an effort to be a responsible parent, from sometimes I may have to do things which require things that may not be completely understood by the children, and they may be misinterpreted as being, you know, something else. And, you know, we'll talk once again in much more concrete, specific terms, please God, next week. So thank you for coming, and look forward to seeing you then.